Jeremiah was indeed a bullfrog, who drove him to the liquor store to get his mighty fine wine? So much of the story remains untold. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is the Use All the Crayons podcast, the one that's all about stories, stories, and more stories. Stories about God, stories about the devil, and stories about the fight they put over the soul of Roger Goodell. There's stories of love, crime, greed, and lust, all the stories and emotions of which you're composed. Stories about sports, politics, and lots of stories about me. But before we get to the stories, I must first sully the whole pretense by asking you to help me raise money. When I, in May and March, unveiled my GoFundMe page, I did so because I believed I needed the whole world for my book to succeed. Now, early reviews of how to deal with things that suck and a maelstrom of news events has convinced me I had it all backwards. I don't need the world. The world needs me. Really, who's in worse shape? It's an audacious premise, yes, but is it true? Let's on this day have that discussion, at least before anyone tosses a tariff on hubris. My dreams have always been humble. When people ask me if I was chagrined my self-deprecating humor had not made me famous, I'd say, no, I'm sorry, my self-deprecating humor has not made me solvent. Yet there were intangible rewards. It was a couple of Christmases ago when an Indiana stranger called and said she wanted to buy 30 copies of my Colorful Life Guidebook. Colorful Life Guidebook, Use All the Crayons. I said, wow, you have 30 friends? She said, no, I only have 10 friends. I'm taking the other 22 copies to the local cancer ward where I know it'll make people happy. That was one small Midwestern town. Think there's any place in the world that's dominated by unhappiness this Tuesday morning? Know anybody that could use a lift, something that combines humor and heart? I need your help for me to reach them. I've already engaged a crackerjack local to marketing firm that's convinced me that together we can break through to a large audience. But that costs money. I had a local print shop produce 50 copies to distribute the book to booksellers, promoters, influencers, and people in the Parkinson's community. That takes money too. How was the early reaction? Is euphoric too strong a word? Some would say no, it's on target. I do already sense a groundswell of untapped support. Here's how Meta AI described the online reaction to my announcement that the first 50 copies are up for grabs. Commentators eagerly express interest in purchasing signed copies of How to Deal with the Things That Suck. Many request shipping and payment details, while others congratulate the author on his latest work. They without exception cheer his efforts. Enthusiasm and support dominate the comments. They do dominate the comments. Unusually strong reaction like this is often indicative of a successful book release. Want to hear it from a human? This is a note from a local woman sent me that she was just halfway through the Things That Suck book. Oh my! !! Loving it! !! Chris, you are a funny man! !! I mean, really! !! That's 8 exclamation points to garnish just 13 words. But some of you may be saying, what does she know about humor or books? Well, she owns a popular local bookstore. I predict with her enthusiastic support, she'll sell 150 of these books through Christmas. Imagine how many I can sell if the book gets picked up by Barnes & Noble. I'm working on it. I'm so far 70% towards my $7,500 goal with GoFundMe. I've had 22 donors fund me as much as $1,000 to spread the word. I would think the second push I could easily double the 22. Could I double the amount donated? Exceed my goal? That's a bit trickier. The deeper we go, the more tenuous the connection, or so goes conventional wisdom. But that may not apply to between you and I. Perhaps you've been reading my stuff for years, free, since 2007. And you and your whack job uncle used to bond over my blogs. Maybe the uncle just fell down the steps. Maybe he left you a map to a treasure chest of bitcoins that'll make you rich once you find the loot and figure out how you're going to buy pop carts with bitcoin. Maybe you get frustrated and transfer the whole bewildering mess over to me. To be honest, I don't even know if you can hold a bitcoin in your hand or use them to fill up a treasure chest, much less drop one in a vending machine full of Hershey bars. Today, trillions of dollars are being shed in markets that once appeared bulletproof and now seem on the verge of imminent collapse. Who has money to lavish on a struggling writer? Everyone. Because you don't need to donate $1,000 to make a difference. $5 can make a real difference. Postal media rates to mail this book are $5.38, or about $2 more than it cost to mail my previous books. What's my takeaway from this disparity? I need to be writing lighter books. My next book is going to float. Either that or I'll delete every other word, believing as I do, the narrative will still make some sense. Hell, it might make more sense. So donate, share, and recommend to friends. I'm convinced that together it'll all make a real difference. Thank you for your consideration. That's GoFundMe Chris Rodell. Now back to the stories. Titanic is concluding now on AMC. I like the subtle irony of a movie where a painter gets framed and a woman whose name sounds like Rose is hauled into a lifeboat and given an oar. We had some unsettling local news last week that had all of us contemplating ghoulish fates. A young man was riding a motorcycle that hit a pole and sliced off his leg below the knee. Everybody read all the papers and asked all the questions. How will he cope? Will he persevere? How will he react to this grueling rehab? In essence, everyone wanted to know if a defoot would lead to a defeat. That's a defoot lead to a defeat. I think not. It's a terrible result, but he's lucky to be alive with so many productive years ahead of him. My question was less existential. What did they do with the foot? I'm vicarious about everything that happens to everyone else. How would I react if the same thing happened to me? So when I hear says someone loses a foot in a mishap, I put my feet in his shoe. First of all, I'd want a proprietary say over his disposal. The assumption is that they incinerate it as medical waste, a terribly callous judgment of a body part that's been with a man or a woman every step of the way. Well, I guess every other step. The thought would have infuriated Captain Augustus McCrae from Lonesome Dove. He woke up to find a difficult ordeal. He woke up after a difficult ordeal in Indian country to find a drunken Sawbones had removed and disposed of his blood-poisoned leg. McCrae was angry because he fancied using the bones for a walking stick, which when you get right down to it is a rather redundant mission for old leg bones. I'm thinking more in the lines of jewelry. I think I'd like to make a necklace out of mine. I imagine it would help me win a fortune in bar wagers about my yoga-like boast that I could put my foot around my neck without getting off my bar stool. But I could see family objecting to me showing up at things like church and school assemblies with my neck adorned with my foot. So that would leave the burial option. I'd find a shady place down by a creek and have a solemn little ceremony praying my foot gets to heaven enough ahead of me that it could save the rest of me a place, assuming that is my soul has some soul. Then for the rest of my life, I could commune with it like Civil War Union Major General Daniel Sickles, like he did with the amputated leg he lost to a rebel cannonball at the Battle of Gettysburg. After the war, he presented the leg bones in the destructive shot to what is now the National Museum of Health and Medicine in Washington, D.C. He'd visit them both every year on the anniversary of the amputation and make what I guess would be fascinating small talk. It's a pity those visits predated reality TV by about 140 years. Must be the organ donor in me that brings it to life. Must be the organ donor in me that brings life to these morbid thoughts. When I die, my entire body, eyes, heart, kidneys, liver, the whole shebang will be up for grabs. Note, informing friends that they may one day help themselves to one of your vital organs does not make them any more likely to loan you $20. I'm hopeful that one day they'll even be able to reanimate parts of me so that my limbs will be grafted onto the needy. In fact, this isn't as far out as it seems. A friend of mine said body part disposal was no longer what I guess you'd call knee-jerk reaction among medical professionals. In fact, she said that much more medical donor banks than much of the public realizes. Besides common blood banks, there are tissue banks, organ banks, and even bone banks. She said bones from accident victims, spare ribs, are being preserved for worthy research purposes. So now I'll know not to snicker if I ever hear someone say they're going to make a late night withdrawal from the old bone bank. My curiosity was piqued, and I momentarily thought about calling a bone bank to learn just what kind of groundbreaking work they're doing. But I had decided against it. They're probably too busy to deal with my silly questions. And it's a sure thing our nation's bone banks are staffed with skeleton crews. Rejoice! Spring is when Mother Nature puts on her makeup. This is when the world embarks on four of the most joyful days of the calendar. It's something the faithful look forward to all year and celebrate with adulation that is refreshed anew each spring. Now that statement may cause confusion between groups secular and sacred. The sacred will, of course, think I'm referring to the upcoming Easter holiday. The sports-minded will offer a secular amen because they think I'm referring to baseball's opening day and the return of the Masters to Augusta. I think I found a way to bridge the conversational gulf. It is the bobblehead. I was thinking of the bobblehead phenomenon yesterday when I was sitting at the bar contemplating the bobblehead of St. Francis of Assisi. This was written in 2012, back when I was hanging out at the pond. St. Francis of Assisi is one of the most revered religious figures in history. It is said no one in history showed more devotion to imitating the life of Jesus Christ than St. Francis. His bobblehead is between one celebrating Pittsburgh Penguins goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury and Mo Sizlak, the repulsive bartender on The Simpsons. I asked Dave, the owner, how he came to possess a bobblehead of a major religious figure who I at first thought was Friar Tuck bobblehead. It was an Altoona Curve game, minor league baseball. St. Francis is the college nearby, and they had a St. Francis bobblehead night. I didn't think about it till later, but intend to ask him today if the St. Francis bobblehead, made in honor of a patron saint of animals and the environment, has had any impact on the clientele. Like, do customers become less wolf-like when they were required before he acquired the bobblehead, and maybe show a greater propensity toward recycling? Dave's great for that. You can ask him anything and he'll give you a thoughtful answer. Just the other day I asked, given the immutable laws of gravity, why did the coyote always fall without fail faster than the anvil? Dave said the laws of slapstick cartoon comedy supersede the laws of physics. Dave's got 80 bobbleheads on display at the pond, and I'd put his collection up against more widely touted one being unveiled this week at the lavish new Miami Marlins ballpark, home to what is mistakenly billed as the Bobblehead Hall of Fame. It features 588 bobbleheads, and looks like fewer than half of them represent real players inducted in the actual Hall of Fame. What is cool is the display is geared to shake, so the bobbleheads are always bobbling. The news made Dave envious. He said he's going to try and think of some way to generate some energy that will make his bobbleheads bobble. I told him coordinating the bathroom breaks of three or four of the more bobble-bellied customers would probably do the trick. His collection takes a back seat to none. It includes bobbleheads of Albert Einstein, pirate announcer Bob Prince, Dudley Do-Right, and this is key, the great Arnold Palmer. The Pirates gave away Palmer bobbleheads on AP's 80th birthday in 2009. I think it's one of the greatest bobbleheads in bobblehead in history. Palmer represents all that's great about sports and life. In fact, there's only one bobblehead superior in that regard. That would be bobblehead Jesus. Of course there's a bobblehead Jesus. In fact, there are dozens of them. My favorite is Buddy Christ, which has the bearded one winking and giving the thumbs up signal. I even saw one bobblehead that showed Jesus wearing a t-shirt that reads, "Jesus hates Obama." And I don't believe that for a second. If a Jesus bobblehead hated anyone, it would probably be bobblehead LeBron James for his Judas-like betrayal of Cleveland. And I don't believe that either. Like the man, bobblehead Jesus is all about love. And that's as it should be. The St. Francis bobblehead had me wondering if there were any apostle bobbleheads. You'd think there'd at least be a Judas bobblehead because there's an Osama bin Laden one. I learned this when I read that the Gettysburg Museum store was pulling its John Wilkes Booth bobbleheads after controversy erupted over having the Derringer-wielding villain within firing range of the bobblehead Abraham Lincoln. Matt Powers of the Kansas City-based bobblehead company said they've made more than a million bobbleheads and have never had one pulled until the bobbling Booth. Lincoln scholar Harold Holzer, and I assume he's a living, breathing scholar and not a talking bobblehead, said it was in bad taste, like selling Lee Harvey Oswald dolls in the Kennedy Museum. I respectfully disagree and cite my role model, the Jesus bobblehead. He'd forgive the Booth bobblehead. He'd forgive the Judas bobblehead if there was one. Yes, bobblehead Jesus would surely turn the other cheek. But then again, isn't that what all bobbleheads do? Speculators envision a day when toilet paper is traded like coffee, milk, and other commodities. They are mistaken. Toilet paper cannot become a commodity. Toilet paper is a commodity. Commodity. If spring is indeed when Mother Nature puts on her makeup, then fall is when she climbs back into her coffin.